Hello everyone, welcome to this episode of the Careers Podcast. This episode is actually going to focus in on how to surf your own career waves and how to maybe mindfully develop some career resilience throughout your life. Now, careers, as we know, is quite a messy business and we all think it should be a bit clearer, but unfortunately all the way through our life, and maybe fortunately as well, that it's not always cut and dry, and there's many a twist in the road along your career, whether it's at your early career stage as a student, mid-career professional, or even when you're contemplating what might you do after retirement. So joining me today to unpack this is Aisling Fagan, who is a student union officer here in DCU for Welfare and Equality. We have Sheila Barr, who is a careers advisor here in the service with responsibility for Springboard funded students. So she'll be telling us a little bit more about that. We have Paul King, who is an assistant professor here in the Institute of Education, and he teaches both on the postgraduate Masters in Education and the Masters in Guidance Counselling. And he's actually currently completing a PhD in the area of mindfulness on the design and implementation of a wellbeing programme from educators informed by mindfulness approaches. He's also a mindfulness teacher and a member of the Mindfulness Teachers Association of Ireland. So we have a good panel here to unpack some of these concepts around mindfulness and around career resilience. So I just might start off with yourself, Sheila, if that's all right. And maybe first of all, people mightn't actually be aware of Springboard funded programs. Could you just maybe tell us a little bit about those and who are the students on these programs?
Yeah, so Springboard is a fantastic initiative. It's been around for a few years now, and basically it is the program by which the government funds a lot of the time they would be returners, people who've already been in the workplace, to retrain in an area where there was a skills shortage. So a lot of IT courses, operations management, user experience, etc. But also the list is broadening as well. There's now some in areas of European policy, etc. So there's a broad range of Springboard funded courses. If you're in employment, Springboard will pay for 90% of the fees of your course. And if you're unemployed, they will pay the whole lot, 100% of the fees. So it's really a fantastic initiative.
So what's the typical student that you find on the programme? Is it like the 18-year-old straight out of school? Or at what stage
are
they?
Not usually the 18-year-old straight out of school. Usually they would be mature students. But that could range from somebody who's 25 to somebody who, we have people in their 60s who are doing Springboard courses. So a lot of the time they have a lot on. They're very, they're under a lot of pressure because they're working full time and they're taking part in the course. And the course is, they're all level 8 and level 9 programs. So, you know, there's quite a lot of work involved. So your typical student would be either between jobs and is retraining and therefore maybe has a little bit more time to put into this to this course, to whatever course they're doing, or they might be working full-time or part-time. So actually, in answer to your question, there's probably no typical Springboard student, if I'm honest. They're from every background and in lots of different kinds of situations.
So we're hearing this phrase, career resilience, being bandied around an awful lot, especially in the last couple of years. And even since I've been kind of in the job the last few years, it's definitely more of an everyday term. Mm. Could you maybe just unpack what career resilience means?
Yeah, so I suppose it is something that I would see or that I would talk about a lot with the students who come in to see me in the career service. That sometimes they feel a little bit overwhelmed with all of the pressures that are in their lives, and it's the same with all of us. So I suppose for me, I read a definition of career resilience, which I thought was really good, and it was around persisting, adapting and flourishing despite challenges and disruptions in your career. Because as you said earlier, Siobhan, the only certainty is uncertainty, and there's no such thing as career certainty. And, you know, the nature of life and the nature of your career path is that it will diverge. There'll be slips, there'll be twists, there'll be turns, etc. And I think resilience is around, you know, just dealing with those twists and turns and obstacles and opportunities and good and bad and all of that. And managing to get on with it, basically.
It's going to bring yourself in, Ash, that you're working with the students on the campus. So you maybe we've broadened out the discussion into broader resilience and the adversity that students face nowadays, not just in DCU, but maybe broader generationally.
Absolutely. So I think we're seeing a lot of issues kind of surrounding education at the moment, particularly higher education, and the struggles that students are facing on a daily basis, whether they be on campus or distance learners or international students, no matter what kind of students they might be, whether that's kind of the cost of education, because now post-Brexit, we have the highest fees in Europe. So that financial barrier is causing a lot of issues for a lot of students, and that comes into the cost of accommodation as well. Particularly here in Dublin, and for DCU students, it's just extortionate. But that's not just a Dublin problem, it's all over the country for students. And leading on from that, because of those costs, so many students have to work part-time jobs, if not full-time jobs, alongside trying to get their education. And so many of them are missing out on the education they're trying to pay for by getting the money to pay for it. So many of them are missing lectures, are missing seminars, are missing all sorts of things because they have to pick up that extra shift in work, because they have to get home at the weekends to work their job, or they're commuting. There's all sorts of these different struggles that are popping up for students because of the financial barriers that are there at the moment. So we see that on a daily basis, that's really, really affecting students, but not just in DCU. You talk to any other of the students' unions across the country, even in the UK as well. Like, it's the cost is just such a major, major thing for students at the moment.
And just bringing in around the broader challenges around being a student now, what around the concerns around the career uncertainty then, and if we're just kind of tying it back into career resilience, like one time you could apply for a job and it was a job for life. Now, that was kind of gone in even when I was coming out of college, which unfortunately was not there yesterday. But at the same time, it is becoming more certain that it'll be always uncertain. How do you think students are responding to that?
I feel like there's always an underlying fear and an underlying pressure there, but I do think the train of thought around careers and students nowadays is kind of changing. I feel like there are not all too many students who think that they're going to go into their job straight out of college and will be there forever. I feel like there is a kind of a desire for change and a desire to do different things, but there still is that absolute fear. Like, some people will want to go into a job tomorrow and that'll be it, and they will want to stay there, but there is that underlying thing of, we never know what's going to happen tomorrow, the economy could change tomorrow. You know, all of these things are coming through every day, and especially in technology, which could, you know, eliminate so many different jobs and career paths for so many people. So that's definitely an element of it as well. But again, with the economy and I suppose all of that combined, there is that underlying fear and the pressure of trying to know what to do and where to go, even though everything could change tomorrow. So I think there's a lot in that. But definitely it is a frightening time as well. I think people are aware that there are a lot more job opportunities now than there has been, I think, and a lot of new jobs constantly coming about that people are finding themselves in, which is fantastic. But it is, again, like, that might not be there in a year's time. That my job might not be relevant in a year, you know. So I think that's definitely underlying as well.
Would you get a sense that people recognise it's happening, but maybe some will feel maybe a bit overwhelmed by the not knowing?
Definitely, yeah. And you can see people, like, coming out of school, and they might be kind of driven by career, maybe not so much by what they think will make them happy and things like that. They're looking ahead, being like, there's always going to be a job in this in like 10 years time, no matter what, that I'll still be able to do that. So I think that could definitely be a factor that's steering people, rather than kind of looking at what makes them happy, what they enjoy doing, what a job they'd like to see themselves in, even if that becomes an issue and things like that. So
when we over to you, Paul, it might be a good intro into why we're including mindfulness today. So maybe can you give us a little bit of a brief what mindfulness means to you?
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Siobhan. Yeah, I loved what you said at the outset about career being a messy business, you know. And in some sense, you know, when I was listening to Sheila and Aisling, you know, talk about Springboard and talk about student experience, in a way it identifies that for us, that life can be messy and can be difficult and isn't smooth. And so my own interest in mindfulness, and I think capacity, is that first of all it gives us that sense of awareness of what's happening in my life, you know, without feeling swamped or feeling that this is overpowering. And in some ways it can help us accept that this is normal, you know, ups and downs are part of life and living. And you know, really interested in Aisling's perception on and experience as a student of the challenges students experience today. And I'm sure if we move back 20 years ago, 40 years ago, the same scenario would apply with different contexts or reasons. So we know that uncertainty is definite. So I think the thing that mindfulness fundamentally gives us is that sense of awareness that it's okay to feel this way, that it's not my fault, that this is reality, and so can I just notice that first and see how that impacts me. And the other part I think that's really important is that sometimes I think, particularly in respect of career, and when she talked about people coming back to find their way to employment and career again, there can be a very strong sense of judgment about ourselves, about what we should have done, can't do, I'm not doing. And I think that complicates the challenge that we have in finding a career that gives us meaning. So I think that mindfulness offers us something around just having compassion for oneself and just saying, listen, you know, in time this will be okay. And what do I need to do? But I don't need to double the challenge I have by critiquing myself and blaming myself for that.
So what if somebody was interested in becoming more aware?
Yeah.
So there is a challenge when you become more aware about, well, what if I don't like what I see?
Yeah.
Okay. So could you talk us through how mindfulness can move you out of that and onto where you want to be? Or is that even a thing?
Yeah, well, I think the first challenge is to notice, to notice. I mean, there's so much that happens in our everyday life that we just don't notice. And I mean, I would say that one simple starting point would be, and I suffer from this myself, would be, what would it be like to live with less technology? You know, that I'm not always turned on in terms of my phone in available technology. Because when you do that, that really opens up lots of experiences for you and lots of awareness. So I think at that very simple level, can I begin just to notice about if I'm having conversations with people, how they are, what they're saying to me, if I'm even watching something. Or any aspect of my life, can I just notice it, rather than kind of being what we talk about, having the monkey mind, you know, where it's all over the place. Beyond that then, I mean, there are, because of technology and its advantage, there are lots of, I suppose, accessible platforms and applications, and there are all, many of them freely available that allow you to dabble, but it is hard work, you know, it's a challenge. I mean, there is no fix, and as well as someone who's passionate about mindfulness, I'm also its harshest critic, because I think it has been presented as a quick fix, or this will make you feel better. It's not about making you feel better, it's about making you aware of what your reality is, and so that you don't become swamped by it. But I think sometimes it's presented as this is going to take my pain away and make things better.
You mentioned a little bit earlier around compassion.
Yes.
And I suppose I'm kind of growingly aware that maybe some people are maybe misinterpreting the word self-compassion to being self-pitying or self-indulgent.
Yes.
Whereas I think it's a little bit more deeper and a bit more of a call to action. You know, it's more of a focused response. Have you anything around self-compassion there that you might want to add to that?
Well, I think if you have compassion for yourself, you know, it's almost a follow-on that you'll be more compassionate towards others, and that surely is a good thing for our world and our society. I mean, and we're living in really, really, I mean, again, much like Ash was saying about careers, maybe people always felt we were living in a very uncertain phase. I don't know. But I think my understanding of it is it's for self so that it is for others. You know, it's not something that's necessarily indulgent or allows, gives me permission to, you know, to loathe myself or to hate myself or to indulge myself. You know, it's really about opening up the possibility of being kind, and I think if we're kind, that's good for everyone. That's good for everyone.
Mm-hmm. I bring it back into around the whole area of career resilience. So if we're thinking about our listeners today, and whether they're in college or at home or in any part of whatever stage of life they're at, you know, in around the career resilience piece, what would be, say, the typical building blocks that you might recommend somebody maybe to, I suppose, consider looking at, Sheila? These are kind of a few things you could at least do no matter what stage you were with, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, when Paul was there talking about, you know, mindfulness and self-compassion particularly, I think that's one of the first things that that is important to look at, is how we talk to ourselves. And an awful lot of the time we talk to ourselves in a way that we wouldn't talk to our worst enemy. You know, we're hyper self-critical. We have huge expectations of ourselves. So I think one of the things is to, you know, to kind of pause and notice, How are you talking to yourself? What is that voice in your head telling you about things you should be doing and the way you should be and things you shouldn't have done and so on? So I think I agree 100% with the whole the benefits of mindfulness in terms of just noticing what's going on and noticing what is that voice in your head saying to you, and maybe looking at that and thinking, okay, can I shift the way the voice in my head speaks to me, and can I show myself a little bit more understanding and compassion? The other thing then as well, I think in terms of mindfulness again, and it helps us to pause, you know. And I think a lot of the time, when I'm talking to students, one of the issues is that they might feel overwhelmed by the workload that they have. And I think an awful lot of the time, you know, mindfulness allows us to pause and kind of say to ourselves, okay, what exactly is the reality here, as Paul described? And sometimes we can identify what are the things that we can control and what are the things that are outside of our control. And I think that an awful lot of the time we feel overwhelmed by things that we have absolutely no influence or control over whatsoever. And if you just pause for a minute and think, right, what's important here? What is, you know, what is the one or two things that I can do to improve the situation? And maybe what are the things that I just can let go, you know, because I have no influence on them? That can be liberating as well, and that can kind of reduce the feeling of overwhelm a little bit. So definitely controlling the controllables would be one.
I saw a little cartoon thing, and it was about mindfulness, and it helped you put your worries in an orderly queue.
There you go.
You
exactly.
Know, it doesn't yeah. put mind when you said it. Yeah. I always loved that. Yeah,
that's
yeah.
it.
An orderly queue,
exactly.
You know, rather than the mess, you know, the
messy exactly.
head.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, just, and I suppose, and I think this will impact you no matter what stage you're at, whether you're, you know, feeling overwhelmed because of career or feeling overwhelmed for whatever reason. But basically, having strong supportive relationships is very important. So kind of nurturing your relationships, that will help you develop your resilience. Things like sleep, diet, exercise, etc. You know, they're obviously very, very important. And if you don't have those working properly, you will feel depleted and you will feel out of power. And I think there's another lovely analogy about being in power and out of power. And even keeping yourself in power when life is on an even keel will help you prepare for the times when you have an obstacle thrown at you or some kind of crisis.
So back to our analogy that begins about surfing the waves.
Exactly.
The waves are going to happen. So
that's
you're
it.
Going to fall off.
So learn how to surf while the sea
yeah.
is calm maybe or
yeah.
where the waves are small.
Yeah.
Noticing as well when your thoughts are becoming facts, you know, because our thoughts are only our thoughts. And the mindfulness again will help us maybe thinking about a reality. When will our thoughts, you know, when do we notice that our thoughts begin to suddenly become facts? And they're not facts, they're only our thoughts. So, you know, kind of bearing all of that in mind. And I think ultimately be kind to yourself, you know, be kind to others, again, kindness, and be kind to yourself. And maybe identify, are there other pressures at the moment that you can maybe let go of while you're focusing on what's happening? I suppose there's that element of kind of general ideas to support your resilience. In terms of career resilience, and maybe going back to what Aisling was talking about, you know, that is a different strand of resilience, I think, in terms of, you know, keeping prepared for as prepared as you can for changes in technology, for what's coming down the road in the sector that you're interested in. I suppose for Springboard students, they are doing that, which is
excellent.
Wonderful, you know,
yeah,
so they are doing
great
that.
Role model for our current students.
Absolutely,
yeah.
They're fantastic. And it also kind of, you know, is a good example of the fact that there are always going to be learning opportunities as you go through life. You know, we are all lifelong learners, you know, because everything is changing so much. You can do lots of online courses. You can go to evening classes. You can teach yourself stuff. You can, you know, there's an awful lot of ways that we can develop the skills that we are going to need continually throughout our career.
What do you recommend, Aisling, for students that are here more based on the campus now, you know, to try and positively challenge themselves to, I suppose, for want of a better word, you know, that resilience muscle?
Firstly, just to say, I couldn't agree more with everything that the guys have just said about everything there.
No contrarian views here at all. No drama.
But no, just the points on the self-compassion, and that's, I think, even something that students are terrible for. Absolutely devils for not just generally looking after themselves, and that goes on to affect absolutely everything. Like taking a pause and looking within and trying to figure out what it is exactly, what are these pressures, why are we feeling like this, and then becoming self-aware, and in that being able to find the help that they need. And whether that's just a chat with a friend, heading to the career service, potentially heading to the counselling service, whatever that might be, but just being aware themselves of what it is that's going on around them. Why are they feeling like this? And that can just, that can conquer so much, just being able to look within and to figure out where exactly everything's coming from. In terms of what people can do on the ground, I suppose there's so many services available to students, whether that is on the ground or online or wherever they might be. So whether that is popping into your student advice centre and just asking the question and seeing where it is that they can point you, whether it's popping up to your students' union, we get all sorts of questions and queries. It's kind of a one-stop shop of, they come with the question and we try to figure out where is best to go. But there are so many workshops and programs and different things that people can do to build up their resilience. And as well, we provide lots of different opportunities for people to kind of step out of their comfort zone and maybe run to be a class representative or run to be part even of the students union, or to get involved in different clubs and societies and meet like-minded people. And through all of these things, people learn so much about themselves and what they're capable of, and they never even knew was it, you know, that they never even knew. So I think those are all fantastic ways of even like stepping in the door of building up that resilience, because getting to know yourself, I think, through all of these things is a really good first step, as we said, looking in and becoming self-aware and realizing your strengths and weaknesses and where those can play are all a massive part of it. But I love that analogy of learning to surf when there are no waves. So while you're having your best time in college and kind of figuring out yourself and doing that all while everything is relatively okay, and then when something comes along, that maybe then being better prepared to deal with the things that come your way.
Like I always think things like, you know, trying to maybe develop a new hobby or an interest, you know, and I think all of us, you know, we're a bit older than you, Aisling, have kind of taken on new hobbies and interests later in life.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to learn something from scratch, but it does encourage you to know, you know, you started knowing nothing and you're actually reasonably okay. And it can be useful then if you do have to change career, or you have to move in a different direction, or to move countries, you know, because you've been seconded abroad, or, you know, you can kind of feel like I can take on things, you know. And big fan of, you know, going abroad for the summer, doing a J1 visa. I think half of DCU is in Vancouver.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think they'll have to rename a street over there.
Probably.
You know, and things like that. Interrailing. Yeah. Years ago, I don't think it happens anymore. This is definitely showing my age. People went to Holland picking tulips. Do you remember that?
No,
I didn't do it. I'm from Wexford. We pick strawberries. but it's that type of thing, and it does ground you.
It does.
You know,
just exposing
and it's
yourself.
Surely the valley of the pound. You know, you really kind of get to grips with it. You know.
Yeah.
So, just back to yourself, Paul. I suppose I'm always very, very conscious of, you know, and you have been very pragmatic in your approach around mindfulness, and you're not McDonald's. What's that phrase?
McDonaldization of mindfulness.
Thank you, Paul. Oh, yeah, I think we're all a bit, again, that as the saying goes. But for you, for those that do go towards mindfulness, how do you, what do you see the benefits are? If that's your thing, if you kind of reach out and say, I'm going to give this a shot.
Yeah.
What are the benefits, do you think?
Well, I suppose, I mean, it's connected to your question, Siobhan, but I want to pick up something really important, I think, about Sheila and Ashton said, which is around my issue about when we place high levels of expectations on ourselves to be responsible for our own mental health and well-being. And absolutely, we have a responsibility to do that. But there are objectively some things that we cannot do anything about. I mean, Ashton was talking about, you know, the exorbitant cost of going to college, for example, you know. She was talking about the challenge of people returning to work. And I think that what's very helpful in terms of cognition or thinking is that this isn't all my fault, you know. The system is broken. Now, if we go too far down that road, then we just take no responsibility. So do you see what I'm saying? Like, there's somehow a middle ground of taking personal responsibility, but also being socially active and saying, how can I play my part in a society that may be broken? And I mean, we have the whole environmental movement in a way is a description of that, and we've just come out of an election which I think in some sense people were saying we want to be more engaged here. So I think that's a good balance for us to you know, remind ourselves that it isn't, doesn't all fall on me for this to be resolved, if that's where our intention is, it won't be resolved. So now, after all that, I've forgotten your question.
No, no, there were the benefits of mindfulness.
Oh, yeah, benefits, yeah.
Yeah, or, you know, yeah, well, you've kind of addressed that.
Yeah, well, the benefits, that is one, I mean, in that sense, that awareness gives you that insight, you know, that sense of actually, you know, I'm noticing myself being very critical or taking all the blame on myself, but when I actually pause and stand back, I realise that there are other factors here, you know, and so for that, it gives awareness of sense and of self, the non-judgmental element that we talked about, you know, and you know, the third thing is capacity for choice, that I have a capacity to choose my response, you know.
And just when I have you, I mean, obviously you're in your role in the Institute of Education, like you're educating the educators.
Mm.
And they're going to be bringing on the next generations into our own society here in Ireland and everything like that, and the guidance counsellors. Mm. Can you speak to the whole, how the topic of resilience and career resilience is kind of coming up?
Yeah.
You know, in your educating of educators and guidance counsellors?
Yeah, I suppose, you and Sheila might be the best critics of this, or the best interpreters.
Well, we have to do a disclosure here now. Both myself and Sheila are former pupils.
Graduates.
Graduates, yeah. Pupils is the wrong word,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Graduates of Paul's, and it's all his fault. We're doing this. We're career professionals.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But I think what we try to do is that we try to begin with the person themselves, in the sense that, you know, what you're doing, we can't say you're going to change the world. It's almost an impossible task, but you can begin to take, like I said a few moments, responsibility for how you manage your own experience of life, and in this context, the experience of becoming a guidance professional or whatever career you might be. So, and I think we do that by constantly, I suppose, inviting our students to reflect about their experience, you know, as it is from moment to moment almost, or as it is from, you know, oftentimes managing what it is to be a student, you know, to have a job, and you know, and to have personal responsibility as well. So it's not like there's some magic trick, you know, this story goes on forever no matter what my situation or context is. So, and we think that to the degree to which you're aware of it yourself, you'll be much more acutely aware of what's happening with somebody else when you're in the responsibility of supporting them.
So you know, its awareness begins at home, really.
Yeah, it really. Yeah, in that sense, it does. Yeah. I mean, there is no. I'd love to say there's a program. I mean, I'm not a big fan of the programs, you know.
Yes.
And I just think that I think it's much deeper than that. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, they can be helpful. I mean, I'd even say that mindfulness itself, it's helpful, but life is complex.
Mm-hmm.
There's there's no point in doing mindfulness if, for example, you're not physically fit. You know, if you're eating the wrong food, and if you're unkind to people, there's a whole series of things that, in a way, to be, I think, fully living human.
So
person.
You're talking about somebody who's mindfully mindfully mindless, like
that's very thinking.
Okay,
you know?
Just going back to yourself, Sheila. Maybe we might ask everybody for their top tip, or maybe it can be more than one top tip. You know, anything that you would recommend. Say people have got a flavour about what career resilience. Say we've acknowledged that it's all quite messy and so on and so forth, and it's a bit of a grey space, and we're trying to, everyone individually is going to be trying figuring out things. What would you recommend for anyone just to start off if they're going to do one thing today?
I think maybe what I would recommend if somebody was going to do one thing today, and if they were feeling, you know, if they were feeling a little bit overwhelmed by their situation, I think it would be to just check in with themselves. What is the voice in their head saying to them? I think it would be that. And I think to introduce a more compassionate inner voice would be a brilliant starting point.
Okay. Ashley?
Probably quite similar in that vein as well. I think just to give yourself a bit of a break, just like, again, as we were talking about earlier, try and not listen to those incredibly high expectations that we all set for ourselves, and to just take a minute, take pause, look in, look within, and try and not be so hard on yourself. And whether that's, I suppose that voice in your head that you're listening to, or if it's outward pressures that are coming in, just taking a break, giving yourself a break, not being so hard on yourself, definitely.
And yourself, Paul?
Well, I go back to, I love the story about Muhammad Ali, who one time was speaking, I think it was in Harvard, to a mass group of students, and somebody asked, you know, he was famous for poetry as well as for boxing, and somebody said, Ali, give us a poem, and he paused for a moment, and at that time in the English language, the shortest poem was Adam's Apple, somebody who wrote it, but Muhammad Ali just said, me, we. And so Sheila's thing is about connecting with self, And the we part, I think, is connect with others.
That's really powerful. Yeah. And I just have a lovely, and whether it's a poem or a saying, and I'll finish off on this. But obviously, thank all of you so much for coming along today. I think you've added so much to the conversation. And I just want to reiterate what Aisling said earlier on, and also Sheila and Paul, is that you do have to be kind to yourself, but don't forget to do a bit of a call to action. So what do I need to do? Who can help? Who can I talk to? So it could be a family member, it could be a friend, it could be a lecturer, it could be your program chair, it could be someone in the SU, student advice centres all the way around in every university in the world, queer services, absolutely. And sometimes you don't know whether, or the counselling services, and sometimes you don't know if you're in the right resource. So Aisling alluded to that earlier on. Just go to the main offices. Start off with somebody. If they feel that they're not the right professional for you, they'll redirect you. But you've started the conversation, okay? And I think when you're moving along in actions or a series of small actions, sometimes it just dials it down sufficiently that your own internal resources can kick in a little bit more, all right? So I came across this by L.R. Nost. So it's called Life. Okay, so life is amazing and then it's awful. And then it's amazing again. And in between the amazing and the awful, it's ordinary and mundane and routine. So breathe in the amazing, hold on through the awful, and relax and exhale during the ordinary. That's just living, heartbreaking, soul healing, amazing, ordinary life. And it's breathtakingly beautiful. So we'll end on that note, and thank you so much.
Thank you, Siobhan. Thank you.